Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Kia ora everyone, and welcome back to Own the Feels, brought to you in partnership with Love Better, where we're doing our damnedest to help us all break up better, which means owning whatever we're feeling and learning how to deal with it. As per usual, I'm joined with Belle. Belle, how are you?
Gorge to be here. Gorge to be talking about, as I mentioned in our earlier podcast, one of my favourite things to talk about, which is love, romance, and its devastating consequences on our lives, and how we can be better in general about dealing with all of this.
Oh, love that. Honestly, that's like it was scripted. It wasn't even scripted. Belle does love talking about heartbreak.
Shut up about it.
Shut up about it, woman. No.
I'd hope there's like more to my character than this, but I feel really passionate about this. I have a lot of empathy for being young and like, or
just
20s.
Being young in general. Empathy for being fucking 17 years old.
Oh, yeah, or in your 20s and just like trying to fucking figure it out and
make it make sense, honestly.
Yeah. And that's why we're here.
Today we're talking about something that couldn't be more 2023 coded. We're talking about online relationships and online breakups specifically. And something that I was thinking about was, imagine explaining to a Victorian child,
your mind, the places your mind goes, to a small Victorian child.
Imagine explaining to them, like, that one of our huge issues right now is how to navigate your digital footprint when you've been in a relationship with someone that you might not have even met that's on the other side of the world via Snapchat, and it's really crushed you. And imagine trying to explain that to someone that had no fucking idea what technology even was. I don't know. It felt very funny, but also very, like, real.
Therein lies the complexity of all of this. You've gone from, like, a suitor wants to marry me into, like, navigating this idea of online, your online presence, your online expression of yourself, how that reads to a stranger.
Yes, and like going on your own Instagram stories and like watching them yourself to see how it's perceived from somebody else. We cannot sit here and pretend that we don't
ever
all do that.
No. I'll be the first to admit.
And do you hate, not that I lived in these times, but do you hate
not that I was a young Victorian child, but if I was.
No, so. But it was kind of like how you were talking about in last week's episode, how, you know, even when you were at uni, the place to meet people in the wild was to go to a bar, and then it felt really cool because it was like, wow, by some chance, two people that are interested in the same things have struck up a convo. Like, we don't have that letter writing or even the phone calls or the idea that if you've said you're going on a date, you actually have to turn up to that date.
At 7 p.m. outside the cinema, otherwise
they're being stood up.
Yeah.
And I just think that is why our commitment, one, kind of sucks these days, is because we can pull out of things so easy.
Oh, totally. And you talk about this all the time really eloquently, which is like low stakes.
Low stakes.
And it's like extremely low stakes, easy for me to like strike up a kind of connection with someone through DMing, like when I'm tired and lonely on a Tuesday night.
Yes.
Whereas, to use your Victorian era analogy, which I'm obsessed with, I just keep imagining you as a Victorian child.
But they probably didn't have glasses. No. I don't know shit about that.
The gravity of it is so there, right? And and that's where we grow up with this idea of fate and serendipity and, oh my gosh, if I wasn't in real life in this moment and never met you, this would never have happened.
Yeah.
Whereas the internet has just like unleashed a kind of endless wild west of opportunities to meet people and form connections, and none of that to say it's bad. It just comes with its whole other own set of complexities, which I think, like, as a society, we're still figuring out how to navigate.
It is a wild world to think that we're, like, snapping and sliding and swiping our way into these relationships. And also when you were saying, you know, sometimes it feels really low stakes to strike up a conversation with someone and get a bit of validation out of it. And then it's like, what if to you that's really low stakes, and to that other person it's like, I have been waiting for them to message me, or I'm really lonely, I need someone. You know, just trying to fathom the gravity of what we're doing online, when a simple Snapchat to you could mean the world to someone else, is a life's work.
It's a life's work. But you've touched on something so great here, which we mentioned in the previous episode, which was like different expectations and different experiences and different feelings on each end of an online sort of relationship, or a real one, but in this context, an online one.
And which, like, can be real, for the record, everyone.
Yes.
No, but in
virtual,
real life.
Digital?
Yeah, virtual.
Yeah. A Zoom ship.
Oh, my God.
It's a lot.
Have you had online or online-esque relationships?
I met someone traveling, and then they lived on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
And so we spent, I think, 6 months apart, and then I moved there. Total disaster when that kind of fully unfolded. But so we had an online relationship, not like sending WhatsApp videos and video chats and messages and stuff. And it was really fun because I was learning a different language, and the time zones were like total opposite, so it was really hard to catch each other on a live moment. And I found it, like, kind of fun and exciting, and then it's just, like, really, I found it really hard to keep up over a sustained period of time. How I did that for 6 months, I don't know.
No.
Maybe I just really wanted to move to France, but be like a little Makona girl with, like, a scarf in the water.
I don't
Wait,
know
that's
if it's
Italian.
Yeah, I was going to say, sorry.
Yeah,
Frenchies.
Read the room, hun.
It's interesting that you say that, because even while we've been discussing this very briefly, we've just begun, but online relationships, I think, to you and I, feel completely different to what they would have felt like 10 years ago to adults. Like,
totally.
We have a fusion of online and real life. Maybe you meet online and then you hang out in real life. Or when you're dating someone, naturally you're messaging heaps and you're seeing each other's presence online heaps.
Yes.
So it's not just, and we will get into this, what sort of you know, we learned at school of, like, online stranger danger. Every person you meet online,
chat rooms are bad. Yeah.
It's very different, and that is such an old, outdated way of looking at online relationships.
Totally. I think you touched on something really great. For some reason, I'm thinking of the rom-com When You've Got Mail with Meg Ryan, and it's like when emails, like, or chat rooms have just been invented, and then they, not to spoil the plot, they kind of like collide in real life, but they don't know that's who they've been chatting to. And so to me, that was like the start of this kind of fusion of hybrid real life online collisions that we live in. And we're sort of talking off air before about how often, we feel like sometimes our conversations are better online, because it's just like our natural sort of form of communication, which is that weird?
I think it's quite Gen Z millennial.
Yeah.
It's definitely, I don't have any online relationships in a romantic way, but I grew up in fandoms and online friendships were huge.
Yeah.
And with Siska, I feel like it's an online relationship between me and particularly anyone that reads the newsletter.
Yes.
And
3.5 million others.
And all these other people, but I feel like the newsletter people actually want to be in the relationship with me. The Instagram people kind of just want to troll me a lot of the time. But I do definitely agree. I feel like I come across a lot better online than in real life. Not that I come across badly in real life, but online,
you come across incredibly in real life.
But there's just something that's so low stakes about it, or so confidence giving.
Yeah.
I don't know, about being online and like it's easier to be funny or witty or I don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, to your question, I don't know if that's a weird thing or a new thing, but I do know that it must be confusing to have an online relationship and then break up and then maybe you've not even met the person and again you're trying to
reconcile what how much of it was real. I definitely feel like I have online anxiety, which is like if I'm crushing on someone and maybe we're messaging, I'm like quite, and I know this isn't possible at all the time, but like quite keen to see them fairly soon. Mm. This is also because I'm extremely impatient. But because I'm so wary of that. Yes. And I also like get really nervous about them building up this picture of me in my mind, on their mind before they meet me. And then you hang out and it's been X amount of days, weeks, months, and there's like nothing to talk about. Or
It's still brave.
I'm afraid.
It's still brave that you like want to do, and good, actually healthy, that you want to do the meeting up really early in the chat stage. For anyone that needs a definition of an online relation, we're mostly chatting about relationships that live predominantly online here. So a lot of the stories that we've got are people that have met sort of in the digital world. Right now, over 300 million people use dating apps worldwide. And so it really felt quite redundant, especially as this is a podcast for young people specifically. It felt redundant not to do an episode about online breakups. Because I feel like this is something that has been ignored in pop culture and in, I don't know, any resources we've ever had about breakups, which has mostly been shitty movies that are like
with this, Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. And so I think pop culture has done a really, really poor job of catching up with the realities of online relationships, because if I think of the only thing I've really seen for online relationships, it's been Catfish, which has only shown them as these awful, scammy, yes. I mean, sometimes it works out okay in the end, but the whole premise of the show is that you're being catfished, you're being scammed, and this relationship can't be real, and it's kind of making fun of the idea of meeting someone online, when for a lot of people, for a myriad of different reasons, it's maybe the only way that they can get into a relationship or communicate with people.
Totally. For so many different reasons, whether that's like geographic things, neurodivergent things, like whatever, maybe you have hobbies that are online based and that's where those people congregate. I would say the one like piece of pop culture that started to kind of cover this was that short story that was published in the New Yorker called Cat Person. And I won't go into too much detail about it, but I think it was the first thing I'd read, and I think that's why it went so viral, about that encapsulated this like incessant kind of romanticizing in an online relationship, and it sort of traces the course of this dynamic over, I'd say, like a couple of weeks or a month, and the sort of like crushing end to it. And I think for the first time it opened up in pop culture, like that these relationships are happening, and it's not just like older divorced people going on like Match.com to like find a new partner later in life. It's like it sort of gave relevance to the types of online relationships that we're having, and how there's like so many different ways in which it expresses itself.
Yeah, and think about how many relationships sort of started over DM slides or, you know, you see someone on TikTok and you sort of message them. They see heaps of that happening in this day and age. And not to say that's always the best, because it's usually quite based on how you look and the persona you're putting online when it's things like TikTok or Instagram that where you're starting your relationships. But, I mean, then you go and get to know them, and that's fine, and that happens. But also a lot of people in, like you said before, hobbies, like chat rooms about hobbies or Discords or whatever, or fandoms, you know, they spark up these beautiful relationships with people that they would otherwise not
never meet.
Have met. And we just don't really see that ever in pop culture. It's always like, oh, like those weirdos that like that niche thing, like they're probably well suited together because they're both weird. And it's like, no, like they have a really good connection. And just because they met online over this thing that they both love doesn't mean it's weird or they're getting scammed, but it also does mean that they have this intense thing that probably really hurts if it comes to an end, because society also is like, that was weird. You shouldn't grieve that.
Totally. And to go circle back to your gorgeous Victorian child analogy, people wrote letters. People have always, like, used the written word to profess their emotions. And in your Victorian era, people would have met once and started writing letters. Like, people did it over wars. Like, just because this is happening faster and in online forums now doesn't negate the kind of gravity that they can have in your life.
So I feel like to get a bit of a more well-rounded view of online relationships,
a less Victorian perspective,
a less Victorian and a less Lucy and Belle perspective, we should probably do what we always do and hear from some of our audience members that have been through online breakups. So this one is quite relatable. It's someone that feels like they've come across better online. COVID lockdown didn't allow for very much relationshiping, but I found so quickly that when I'd start talking to someone online that a mutual had given me the contact for, the moment they asked to go for a walk, I'd back out. Vulnerability is such a hard thing for me, and a walk is simply so hard because I could be a different person online with confidence and all the security of not necessarily having to meet them. Lots of self-learning during this time.
Ugh, lockdown was like such an intensely anxious time period. So yeah. I feel like we have to always grant ourselves grace for anything we did in that time. I remember I had like 4 exes come out of the woodwork, start DMing me. It was just like the whole world was lonely
was
and confused
bored.
And like combing back through all their like traumas and bad things they've done to try and resolve them or to like resurrect like DM online romantic trysts. And I think, firstly, grant yourself grace over your behavior in lockdown. But I think, again, we talked about this in the last episode, but being really honest is like a very freeing thing. So we laughed about calling it elephant in the rooming, but just this idea of like, hey, I feel really nervous. This is kind of funny, but like, I'm really having a great chat with you. And then maybe figuring out like an activity that you can do in real life that doesn't make you anxious.
Yeah.
Is it a coffee? Is it specifically walking that's kind of triggering to you? Do you want to go and hang out in like a group setting where there are more people around?
Yeah.
Is it like going watching a football match where there's like heaps of people, or is it a bar, or is it like what specifically about walking?
Yeah.
Is it you? And then I also think being really conscious of what about your projections of yourself online are different to real life? Are you projecting like someone who's wildly different, or is it just that you communicate easier online? Because I feel like to be trying to be really consistent with those two people as much as you can, your real life self and your online self can help you resolve those sort of anxieties about being really different online.
It's so funny you say that. I remember when I was in my second year of uni and someone took this like amazing photo of me where I didn't have glasses on. I had like a full face of makeup. My hair was fully straight. It was pulled back into a ponytail. Just very not like how I look at all. And it just happened to be like, you know, great lighting. And I was sitting at a weird angle that was like really good for me. And I made it my profile picture and then got like all this validation and all these comments and whatever, and I changed it really quickly afterwards because I remember saying to my friends, this just doesn't look like me in the slightest.
Yeah.
This is not me.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want this being my online like
expectations of me. Totally.
And I was like, I'm not even wearing fucking glasses in this photo. This is, and I have worn these since I was 3. What am I doing? That is not me. And it was kind of, when I look back on it, a big moment for my confidence of trying to portray myself as authentically as possible online, as matching of me in real life. So it's really interesting that you said that, because I hadn't thought of the idea for this podcast specifically that we should be encouraging people to try and match up what they're putting online with who they truly feel inside, because it can be so easy to use the face-tuned one or use
the hot pick.
Yeah.
Or like totally. And I think it's important to acknowledge like that's not an easy thing.
No.
Because it's such a kind of, human tendency.
Especially with dating apps.
Oh.
And it's like pick four photos. It's like,
that express you. I'm like, are you serious? Worn out woman, me
yeah,
in my
I'm
pajamas.
In my bed.
Yeah. Me trying to sleep, me drinking too much coffee and me yeah. at work. It makes me sound super boring. But I think like being really aware of that has been, I found super useful. And I, like I said before, acknowledging like that's not an easy thing to
no.
do. And
it's a really good tip. It's a really good aim. It's a really good goal.
It's a good quest, isn't
good
it?
Good quest to yeah. get to that point where you're self-aware enough.
And it's not about like divulging your whole self online
no.
or like concepting a personal brand for you. But
no.
I think it's about like, would I do this in real life?
Yes.
And like, is this really me?
Yes.
And what am I trying to portray through this window into my life?
And who am I doing this for? That's
yeah.
always a big, especially in our revenge episode when you talk about the revenge selfie and things like that.
Oh my gosh,
who
that's
am I doing this
such
for?
A good question.
Yeah. I always think about that. And I think about that when like ads get directed to me as well online. I'm like, who is profiting off of making me feel like I need this or making me feel insecure? Anyway.
Some man in a hat
yeah,
somewhere.
Some beauty industry that's already billions of dollars
yeah,
worth.
Yeah, yeah.
We have another story. We've got a lot of stories for this one because, as we said, pop culture hasn't really done a good job of talking about online relationships.
Yes.
And then when we came to ask about them, so many of you had stories about them and it just was like someone you were itching for them to be told. And
yeah,
so,
and they're all nuanced
no.
they're all in different platforms and all in different dynamics. So,
100%.
Okay, I'm excited to hear the next one.
So in peak COVID, I met someone on Snapchat. They lived in Italy, whereas I lived on the complete other side of the planet. We completely reworked our own sleep schedules just to talk to each other all day and night. It felt like a movie. But at the same time, they were a few years older than me, and right before my birthday, they were very much pressuring me to do things I was uncomfortable with. I ended things within 2 days of that happening, and I was absolutely shattered that after 5 months of talking all day and night, every single day, this person would try and take advantage of me. They even tried to tell me that they were in love with me and couldn't be with me if I didn't do what they were asking. I felt like this was a really important one to put in because while we're talking about how beautiful online relationships can be, they're also a place where you can feel like you're getting taken advantage of.
Totally. There's such a dark underbelly to the story. And like, firstly, I'm so sorry that this happened to you. But it's also amazing how quickly you shut it
yes.
down and could recognize that it wasn't something that you were comfortable with. And also that you said something that we've been talking about on this podcast, which is romanticizing
yes.
it. And it felt like a movie. And like, I think we have to get to this point where we stop thinking of romantic love as a movie feeling. And that's coming from someone who loves to romanticize
no,
parts of their lives.
But it's because, as we've been saying, all these movies are not showing us reality at all. So these movies, when you're saying it felt like a movie,
yeah,
it felt like Friends with Benefits, or it felt
yeah,
like
yeah, a Catherine Heigl,
Bridget Jones's
yeah.
Diary. You know, it felt like something that wasn't healthy.
Yeah, yeah, right. And so I think being so aware, and I'm aware that that also sounds like it's stripping all the magic, all the like fuzzy fizziness around crushing on someone and falling into something. But like we need, yeah, this thing about feeling like a movie can be super dangerous. I think also feeling like protective of what you send out about yourself
yes.
is something that we should become more aware of. Like personally, I feel I love mystery. And
yeah.
so I love the idea of someone maybe finding me online and not knowing everything about
yes.
me. That's just how I feel safe online. And I know that's different for everyone. But I think the most important thing is when you're sending content and you're engaging in these situations, you're like, am I okay with this as an audit trail or like proof
yes.
of this interaction? And it's so easy for those walls to come down faster in online
yeah.
relationships because you're not awkwardly touching knees at a bar.
Yes.
But yeah, just being very careful with yourself around how much of yourself you give in these online situations.
Especially because we've seen what happens when someone takes a screenshot
yeah.
and you have a breakup, and unfortunately, if especially if you're young, and when you're young you don't quite understand the gravity of what you're doing, whether the gravity of you sending it or the gravity of that person sharing it, it can get quite nasty. And illegal, actually. And so we do have, if you feel like you have actually been in a situation where you have felt like maybe you're being taken advantage of, or if it's leading in a direction that you don't actually know where the line is between appropriate and inappropriate, we have resources down in the show notes. Because sometimes when you are, you know, this person was 16 and it was on Snapchat, which feels very low stakes and very easy, it's hard to understand how big these things can be.
Yeah, totally.
Really proud of this person for knowing what was okay and what wasn't okay for them and cutting it off. But also just they had, you know, reorganized their whole sleep schedules to talk to this person in Italy. And, you know, when you're young, even the idea of like a faraway country is
exotic and exciting.
And so to have feel like you've found love, or have that person using love over you, is just
a dangerous thing.
Yeah.
And also, like, could you imagine rearranging your whole sleep schedule in real life
for
someone? Feels like a useful question to ask in this situation.
Yeah.
Like, if I had said to you, Lewis, like, I'm actually nocturnal now because, you know, I've met someone, and that's no judgment, I think you would be like, whoosh, what is going on?
Yeah.
Have you been watching Grey's Anatomy and you're trying to become a doctor?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Would you do this in real life? No. Then should you do it all the time online? I understand making room for people.
Totally.
Also in the way that I often get Belle to come, like wake up at 5 a.m. and do things with me but that story I just feel like was very important to talk about, because it shows a different side of online relationships, particularly for like young people, really young people. So the next ones are kind of, I don't want to say juicy because I feel like that flattens the people that have taken the time to send in these stories, but they are quite interesting, these stories, I'll say. So a couple of years ago, I started talking with someone I'd known back in high school. They were very lovely from the start, a military person who was very attractive, but they were now a few hours away and only visited twice while we were talking. Even within the 6 months while we were talking, they would start saying that I should move in with them or we should get married one day. Turned out they were talking to my best friend and saying the same stuff to them the whole time. We only found out after the fact when they ghosted us both. I mean, at least you had someone going through the exact same thing to help you.
Companion in the misery.
Yes. But this is another thing in online relationships. You feel like, or this person felt like, it was so low stakes that they could just ghost you.
Yeah. Or like, I was thinking about this analogy the other day, like, you're in the room together, but you don't know how many other people are in the room.
Yes.
And that
could be your bestie.
Harrowing.
I know.
And I just think, like, the internet can also be really, I sound like I'm such a boomerang. The internet, the web.
The web.
The world wide web can seem really limitless for the lies we can tell and the stories that we can tell. And I just feel like, again, this comes back to trying to balance our online relationships with some version of real lifeness. And it's so dangerous. And I think what these latest two stories have in common is like a bit of love bombing.
And
people using love over you in that way is never a good kind of dynamic to start a relationship with.
No way. But wait till you hear this next story.
Okay, I'm nervous.
So this person, spoiler alert, has been dragged along for 3 years. When I was 18, I first got Tinder and spent a solid few weeks having conversations with random people thinking they were the one. A few weeks in, I met someone and we messaged the first night until about 3 a.m. This was the start of 3 long years of messaging every day, telling each other that we loved each other, planning the one day future where we'd like to have kids and marry. The only problem was we never met. They lived about half an hour away from me, only half an hour.
Oh my God.
And while I was always keen to just seal the deal, something would always come up. It got to the point where I'd be sobbing while sending long paragraphs about how I'm so confused that they say they love me and want to be with me but don't want to meet me. During this time, we both on and off saw other people, but even when I had a full-on partner, I still had this person in the back of my mind. Awful, I know, and would message them most days. They would give me opinions on the people I would see in my real life, but still tell me they love me and that we would get married. One day they told me that they had figured out they were actually in love with their best friend and that they were going to make a move. I was heartbroken. While I'd been seeing other people, this person had just been having one-night stands but always coming back to me and telling me how I was definitely the one for them. Once they became official with their best friend, they just stopped messaging me, and that was that. I think more than anything, I felt stupid for jeopardizing my own real relationships when they dropped me when they found someone they liked in the real world. I'm over it now. I'm in a great relationship of 4 years and see that what I felt then wasn't proper love, more affection mingled with obsession and maybe early signs of phone addiction. But it was wild navigating a completely online relationship, thinking I was the only one. I know now that this is something lots of people my age have experienced as the first generation to use dating apps. First of all, great work on healing, and so happy that you're in a long relationship where you feel loved and you get to meet the person in real life. Second of all, great self-awareness on the fact that you thought you were the only one going through this. It was actually a product of your generation.
Totally.
Third of all, Belle, what are your takes?
Just utterly devastated for that experience. But again, holy shit, you've done so well to Phoenix out of this.
Owned the feels. You owned the feels in a huge way.
You're a textbook case for own the feels. We have a lot to learn from you in this. I feel like where do I start? It's so buzzy that all of this developed so quickly, and buzzy not as a reflection on you, but how messaging manipulation can happen so fast. It's like normal real life relationships, like completely expedited, like gone running really, really fast on a treadmill because you can. Imagine not being able to message and you're like, cool, I'll see you once a week, and how much more slowly things would have progressed. I think as well, like them, they just treated you so awfully, like pulling out at the last minute is like so devastating. And I think this is tangled up with, again, these stories that we're told of what love is, and that love is complicated, but if it's right, it will work out in the end. And there's this one person for you, and if you don't make allowances for them to show up in your life, even after 3 years, like you're letting go of something, some incredible opportunity. And I think radically accepting that that's actually not the case is like such an amazing step in stopping these things from happening.
The stories we tell ourselves.
The stories we tell ourselves are so dangerous. And I think again, we're starting to see this a little bit more in pop culture, like normal people started kind of playing with this idea of like secret relationships that no one else sees, which is something we referenced in the last episode of like until you're in real life with each other in your messiness and with your friends and with your families or tired from work or in the realness of living, how can you ever truly know is such a conundrum that we face. And I really, really feel for this person who clung on to this vision of this person and what they might mean to them, and how like messaging helped them build this really full, deep story around them when at the end of the day, like they just had to let them go.
And I love when stories have been sent to us with this much hindsight, and they have, it makes our jobs a lot easier when you have done the learnings and told us what you've learned, all of us listening as well. And I just am very grateful for just the really smart and generous people that we have in this audience.
It's so generous because like it's not easy to tell these stories because they make, I think I said this before, like you feel like a failure when something like that happens, and it feels revealing and can often also be tied up in shame or embarrassment. Like, why didn't I see the signs? And like, what do I not think I'm good enough for? And you just fucking deserve someone to show up in your life, and that's not a huge like unfair expectation to have on someone.
Everyone has sort of resigned to the idea that things like this are complicated. And sometimes logistically, but there are some things that you just shouldn't compromise, and it doesn't have to be complicated to make a sort of good story. And sort of on what you were saying before, we do have an episode coming up about shame, because as you were saying, a lot of us feel like, you know, we're failures for not making it work, not trying harder, failures because you couldn't love the person in the way that they loved you. Yes. And a lot of that comes with shame. And so we will be unpacking that. But first, we should talk about some tangible ways that you can deal with an online breakup. So if you were the one broken up with, there are a few ways that can help. We don't have like quick fixes around here. We just have ways that you can build some good internal processes. First one, hard one,
so
especially
hard.
When like Apple Photos and Google Photos are showing you memories all the time, don't revisit the digital memories. So social media, as we know, makes people and people that you've lost, social media makes them very hard to forget because they are reminding you of either the good times or the really bad times via Snapchat memories, Instagram memories, Apple, all the photo memories, and it's very jarring. So while you can actively block these people, as we often talk about, you know, blocking or defriending or whatever people that you've had the conversation with and you're done with, sometimes you actually have to get rid of the digital footprints,
yes,
and the screenshots and the photos.
Oh, and the messages. And it's so hard. Yeah. And I've definitely been guilty of like sitting in my car,
yes,
on a Wednesday night, like lonely and tired, and like scrolling back through messages,
yes,
and just trying to like wring them of any like warmth,
like,
and validation.
Should I have seen this? Like, they broke up with me, but maybe they wanted to do it 4 months ago and I just didn't see it. And
Yes, I have a very incredible friend who, after her relationship ended, handed the phone to another friend and was like, delete every photo of my ex on there. And whether or not you want to go that far,
yeah,
like maybe you're a bit more sentimental, put them in a folder and like,
yeah,
hide
lock
it
them
away.
Yeah.
But again, snip, snip, it takes a lot.
Yes.
But I think, honestly, I do think it's the best way because nostalgia is also an extremely dangerous thing. And when you look back, often you only remember the,
yeah,
good parts and not like the devastating, crushing moments where you've driven half an hour to see them and then they've like come up with some rogue,
yeah,
lie about having COVID or something.
Yeah. And actually, this is backed up by a study that was sort of done, which looked at whether keeping or deleting the virtual objects following a breakup helped people move on. And then when they looked at the results, they saw that when people continually revisit the digital memories, they are, hot take, not hot take, unable to fully detach from that relationship and,
yeah,
therefore unable to move on, you know. It's, and especially if you find a new partner and then you're constantly being reminded of your old partner, that's just something that technology does,
yeah,
and is not that cool.
Oh, I hate seeing like photos of my ex come up on my phone because you're just like, it's such a heart pang, even though I'm so,
yeah,
over it,
yeah,
and in a really good place.
But it's just like, I didn't need to see that today on my way to do a pitch in the boardroom.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I didn't,
yeah,
need that to pop up.
On my like emo Friday, no, or something, I don't need like a gorgeous golden light saturated photo of you from our like fun trip away,
no,
for me to like over romanticize what was an,
yeah,
a fraught time for us.
Yes.
Yeah.
As we've talked about time and time again, another thing to try and avoid doing is curating your social media feeds in a way that you're hoping your ex sees it.
Baiting.
We've,
yeah,
talked about this time and time again, but it's just very, very important and a big one. And I love that we talked about earlier, it's sort of just continuing to, or really focusing on showing your authentic self if you do feel like you want to post things.
Mm.
We're talking about online relationships, so it's likely that we're all online and,
yeah,
we will be posting things. You know, try to avoid posting like song lyrics and stuff to your story in the hopes that they see it, and
or
just focus on you.
Yeah, or like those big messages, and this again, no judgment, we've all been there, like big kind of text heavy,
yeah,
stories around like, don't you just hate it when,
no, don't shitpost about,
no,
them. Don't
everyone
indirect
knows who you're talking about.
Yes.
Take
don't
it
indirect
offline or DM,
yes,
a bestie and like keep it out of public forum.
Do that thing that Belle said before, would you do this in real life?
Yeah.
And
do you stand up at a dinner party, a,
yeah,
dinner party, a barbecue, a party, and,
yeah,
be like, excuse me, everyone, don't you just hate it when
yeah, or would you have that conversation with this person in real life.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to put it on social media, you probably should have had this conversation with them, which is obviously, again, hard in an online breakup to maybe even facilitate these conversations logistically. But in whatever way you communicate with them the best or the most, it's likely that it will be a message if it's an online relationship. But you should do that. You owe them that. You shouldn't just ghost them, obviously. So,
anti-ghost.
Now we should get to the part if you're doing the breaking up.
Oof.
If any part of your relationship has been in the real world, which as we spoke about, likely it has been a combo, you do sort of owe it to this person to, if it's safe for you, do it face-to-face. Again, it's the whole, would you say this thing that you're saying online in real life? And if you can, you should say it in real life. You just owe it to them. It's the compassion thing. You're in a relationship with this person, whether the world has said it's real or not.
Yeah.
It was real to you.
Yes.
You should be talking to them face to face.
Do it in a location that you don't mind ruining for the rest of your life.
Yes. Do it in...
Don't go to your favourite park. Don't go to your favourite bar.
Don't do it at home.
Don't do it at home. Like, go just feel very much remember that, because then it will become the park that you broke up in.
And yeah.
And let me tell you,
you will be taking a detour for 20 minutes around that park to get home. And then obviously if you can't do it face to face, there are things that exist like FaceTime or Zoom.
That's Zoom.
A corporate breakup via Zoom.
Extremely
Google
succession.
Meet. Yeah.
Okay, I sent you a Meet link to break up. All good.
And then if you can't do that, obviously a message, but offer them, you know, a phone call. Like,
yeah.
Just try and make it as close to real life as possible. As we have talked about in the ghosting episode, with online relationships, ghosting is far too easy to do.
Yeah.
But it's just an awful thing to do to someone or to have done to you. So,
especially because it's like, I know you're online. You're emailing at
yes.
work. You're like, I can see you're like
yes.
active in other forums
yes.
or platforms. So the fact that you're too busy to reply is a total
no.
fucking lie. And I just think if there's like one like dating behavior I just love to end in the world, it would be ghosting.
100%.
I mean, obviously all of the like extremely gnarly behaviors, but like in terms of the way we break up with people, I just think trying to have gumption and
yes
and compassion,
because it's so so common. Ghosting is something that comes up in every bloody episode, all these stories. And then just once again, because we're talking about online relationships, it can be really hard to know where the boundary is between what's okay and what's sort of taking things too far, whether, you know, someone is really persistently commenting or friending you or trying to communicate with you. There can be times online where you do feel unsafe. And so, again, we do have resources in the show notes for if you're just unsure whether this behavior's all good, and we'd just rather be on the side of caution for this one, because just... online, it's a
wild west out there.
It's a wild west.
I'm going to take your Victorian era analogy and just elevate it
just
into a different
it to
era.
The wild west. So, on that note, thank you for coming online and having a relationship with us.
thanks for crushing on us online. So fun.
And I'm really looking forward to the next few episodes we have of this, where we can unpack things that we've sort of been baiting on here, like shame.
Mm.
And we also have a brilliant episode coming up, which is about all the lessons that you learnt from your first breakup, which
is a TED Talk.
I know. And we've just had some such self-aware messages, stories. I'm really excited for us to sort of round out the season with some good healing. But before we round out the episode, we have some people to thank. Own the Feels would not be possible without Love Better and everyone who gave us their stories to bring these podcasts to life. If you're going through a breakup and you need advice, or you just want someone to talk to, Youthline New Zealand has set up a dedicated and free Love Better helpline. Simply email lovebetter@youthline.co.nz or text LoveBetter to 234. It's really cool that they do that. Honestly,
it's an incredible service.
I would have done this if I had this during a breakup that I didn't have.
Yeah.
I would have done this if I'd had a big breakup.
I would have done this if it was invented when I was younger.
Yes. So thank you, Love Better, and thank you, Belle.
Love ya.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.